In today's episode, I have red on me, Mike doesn't like the quick cuts, JJ has a challenge for us, Samantha talks about 9/11, and Joey's back from the grave. This is Shaun of the Dead.
Stardew patch coming out next week, I think. So that's also exciting.
I wonder if that sequel's ever going to come out.
He's working on it.
Yeah, but apparently he can't quit working on the first game.
Because people love it.
You know what else people love? Movies.
Yeah.
Hi. I suppose.
Welcome to Funsphere Movie Club. I'm Josh.
I'm Joey.
I'm Sean.
I'm Ed.
I'm Pete.
Diane. That's who I was thinking of. I was like, what the fuck? What's her name? What's my name? That's Diane.
All right.
Is that British Office Pam?
It's me, I'm Pam.
And what?
And I'm Tim.
Oh, I'm Tim.
What? What movie are we talking about today, guys? Maybe
you tell me.
Everyone, shut up. Let me think of something funny. Shh.
Okay. I mean, I even more assured with red.
I know what you're wanting.
Paddington. Yeah.
Yes, we're talking about Paddington.
Josh, you got a bit of red on you.
Thank you.
All right,
that's
where I figured you're going at.
Yeah, appreciate it, pal. All right, so today we are talking about Shaun of the Dead, 2004 British romantic zombie comedy film, directed by Edgar Wright and co-written with the film star Simon Pegg. This is the first of the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, followed by the films Hot Fuzz and The World's End, which star... Simon Pegg and
Santa.
Simon? Nick Frost. So this was a film that was recommended to us by our guest, Joey Jojo. He thought you were getting away with it only on one episode. Wrong. So, little brother, tell us why you wanted to watch this film.
I think this is one of the films that you really just get home and you don't really care if you're watching it or not. You just put it on and it's still just as good as like the first time you watched it. Just something that I think it's just like a comfort movie at this point, which is kind of weird to say.
It is. Okay.
It's not if you look at the analysis, but we can get into that and how this connects to 9/11.
Okay. Wow, we are going places in this one.
I'm about to learn a lot.
Yeah, I think we are. All right, so I'll just say this. Came out to critical and financial success. I was going to say it was definitely a highly quoted movie in 2004. I can definitely say that. I remember seeing it. It was super good. I still like it. I'm also, like Joey, this is a movie I can throw on every now and then. Just sit back and enjoy. And it is. I definitely enjoyed rewatching it again. Okay, let's go around the room and, you know what, Samantha, before we delve into the complex world of geopolitical theory involving the world post and pre 9/11, I think I'm going to ask Mike what he thought of the film first.
So, I just watched it for the first time last night. I guess a backstory. So this movie came out in 2004.
Right.
2004 was my freshman year at UT.
Okay.
And I was in the marching band. and I had the most miserable experience in the marching band. It seemed like, I don't know why, I just didn't really like a lot of the people that were in it.
Yeah.
They all, it was like 300 of the same exact person. Oh. And so like every bus trip, it was always watching like Family Guy, and everybody would constantly quote Family Guy, or it was like movies, all these like late night raunchy movies like Super Troopers and those kind of movies. And so whenever they inevitably started talking about this movie, I just locked it away in a, this is a douchebag supreme that I never want to get near.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just always had this idea that that's what the movie was. I was pleasantly surprised when I watched it. It was really good, and it was not anything like I expected it to be.
Right. Okay.
So I'm glad that I don't have the blinders on anymore. I don't like the all the rapid camera movement that when I thought it was trite.
Oh man. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was just a, it was probably cool at the time, but I was like, this is obnoxious, and I wish they would stop doing it.
Hold still.
Okay. So.
But yeah, it was good. It was funny, and I came out of it with a better appreciation of Simon Pegg.
Gotcha. Just a real quick aside, have you seen any of the other Cornetto films? Okay.
Nope.
Okay.
Hot, like Hot Fuzz, I have that same animosity towards. Like, never seen it, just I assume that it was something that I wouldn't like.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to get other people's opinion.
I understand.
I'd like to get other people's opinion on that Hot Fuzz, because that's one I'm just like, I've watched it once, and like everyone at work praises it, and I'm like, I don't remember liking it, but I guess I've got to watch it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. JJ, what about you?
Yeah. So I think I kind of grew up with those guys, you know. That movie
you
came
know
out.
Them?
What? No, not at all. Yeah. Well, I mean, because their highlights, I kind of grew, you know, 24, they're young, dating, you know, the romantic comedy. To your point about Hot Fuzz, in your 30s, working, making money, and then at World's End. You know, you're past your prime, you're old, you know, and I hit all of those points along with them. So I think watching Shaun of the Dead, for me, I loved every second of it, because to Mike's point, everyone's like Super Troopers, all these like kind of non-scripted comedies that they can go rogue and just say whatever, and all these great one-liners that everyone would quote. And you know, it was funny, but you know, you hear 30 people saying it's not funny. But this movie, the comedic timing, everything about how it was designed is fantastic. Like going back and watching it again, because I always go back to At World's End, because now I'm in my 40s, and that's the one I relate to the most now. But
okay.
I think all of them are great. And but I love Shaun of the Dead, because when it came out, I was 24, just started dating Marielle. I was like, we got to see this movie, because everyone said it's great. So we watched it and laughed, and I was like, oh man, I'm just like this guy. What do you want to do after this movie? Oh, let's go to the same bar. Let's go to, at that time it was Charlie Pepper, so let's go to the bar and drink, you know, because I had no plan. I didn't know what I was doing in life. And so, yeah, because I was 24. Oh dear. Never mind. So yeah, it was a while back ago. So yeah, I loved it because I relate to it. I feel like I, again, grew up with those guys.
Gotcha.
That's nice.
Yeah. All right.
You go way back.
Angela? I'm sorry. Samantha.
Excuse, what are you talking about?
I don't know why I was thinking that Angela was in the room. I was like, what? Okay. All right,
anyway,
Samantha.
I was in a similar situation to Mike. This was my first time actually watching it. It's something I've always just been aware of. But I avoided it more because I'm just not a big, like, zombie fan.
Okay.
I liked, you know, I think Zombieland was the first zombie movie I liked, but even that got old pretty quickly for me. This I enjoyed because I just like British humor.
Gotcha.
You know, I like Simon Pegg. I like recognizing the different actors from like random British shit I watch or like panel shows and things. And Nick Frost it made me think of Doctor Who a lot because Nick Frost is in the season 8 Christmas special. He plays Santa.
Oh.
And Don't Stop Me Now, there's in another episode of season 8, Mummy on the Orient Express, Foxes sings a cover of Don't Stop Me Now. So it just really made me want to watch Doctor Who. But it was really funny. And I'm still not super into zombies. So I can appreciate a fresh take on a zombie movie, even though it's old now. It's still slightly different. Probably won't watch it again, but I did. The style of humor, just like the obliviousness, is always good. Just like really stupid main characters, I can always get behind. Just like bumbling their way through things is fine with me. I like it. Yeah, it was fun. And zombies apparently have to do with 9/11.
Okay.
I would actually like to ask you guys, because I'm also not really familiar with zombies as a cultural phenomenon outside of I've seen some Walking Dead and Resident Evil, but I was surprised at a lot of the stuff that they introduced with how the zombies behave and how they deal with them. And I guess since I don't know past movies, did they come up with some of those tropes, or did they exist in other forms?
Oh, no, they existed in other forms. Yeah. Everything that you see, actually, it's really funny. 2004 was kind of the resurgence of the zombie film franchises. We had
28 Days Later.
Okay. We'll get to that. Dawn of the Dead, the remake of the original 1978 film, came out in 2004. I think we definitely... I don't know when the Walking Dead comic came out originally. It was... Oh, and 28 Days Later came out earlier.
Oh, Danny.
So those two, those are two specific ones that are referenced in this film. The rage zombie joke is all about 28 Days Later, and basically just the entire thing is a Night of the Living Dead thing.
Mm. Even using zombies as labor or whatever. I'm pretty sure that's. Wish I could remember which type of magic practice / religion. I want to say voodoo. Yeah.
Yes.
That's I think why they would even bring zombies back. So to do their bidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and the blending in with them.
Yeah.
Yes, that's from originally. Is that Night of the Living Dead? Maybe.
Yeah, it was.
I think it's all. I think it is. Yeah. That's an old trope too.
So the interesting thing about what we're saying the word zombie so many times, and in those previous films, they never say zombie. They never call anyone a zombie. And that whole scene where they're talking about, they're talking about, hey, don't say it, and they're arguing about, and you're like, yeah, we don't call them zombies, and. Yeah, so.
Where did the zombie name come from?
I was going to ask Josh or Joey that, because I have no idea, actually.
I'm looking back through it because they are...
Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Yeah. No.
I bet that was it.
like
the Cranberries.
Samantha mentioned... Samantha mentioned, it is actually a part of voodoo religion. The creature anyway. They are referred to as zombies as far back as it looks like to the original Night of the Living Dead 1968. Mike, I will recommend that that is definitely a film you should check out. It's got a lot of cool stuff. It's the first Romero film.
Seems like it's Haitian and voodoo.
Haitian, yeah. I would also say see Dawn of the Dead. That's definitely worth it too. Pretty much all these films that we've mentioned, 28 Days Later, great.
Especially if you've never seen Night of the Living Dead, you've got to at least watch it once.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even cinematography and even kind of the hidden yep. underlining meanings. It's really good.
It's very good yeah. for the Joey's right. Okay, so we were talking about the not calling them zombies or stuff like that. I think there's also, so it gets weird because I think the name zombie was trademarked for a little while.
Oh, like mutant?
Like mutant. Actually, and funny enough, I think it was trademarked by the same company that had the word mutant. Because they used it in their comics. Marvel Comics, I think, had the trademark on the word zombie and mutant for a while.
And Captain Marvel.
Okay, that's interesting. So that's real. So just so I get it, I think JJ, you definitely saw prior zombie films before seeing this.
Yeah. So,
Mike,
yeah.
But it sounds like Mike and Samantha had not.
Not really. Nope. No. Well, I mean, okay. Yes. Well, yes, because I've seen Zombieland.
So Zombieland was after that.
No, I didn't. This was my first time watching it. I'm saying. Before this came out, I didn't. Watch zombie movies.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. All right. For myself, I will definitely say I saw it when it came out. I'm sure Joey saw it at the same time because we were probably still watching it. I would have moved out by then.
Yeah.
But I probably was. I think I maybe stopped by and we watched this film together or something.
We may have actually seen it in theaters together. I don't remember.
I can't remember if we saw it in theaters or not, but it's very likely we did. I love it. Like I said, I definitely dug the humor and everything like that. It was also a very nice film. It kind of came out at just the right time because you had 28 Days Later, you had Dawn of the Dead, and they were such good films. Getting this was a nice palate cleanse and a nice like send up of those two films because they are played so absolutely seriously. Especially 28 Days Later. But I loved, this was the one where I kind of watched British comedy too. And I definitely started watching more after this. But this was one that I was glad to see like a kind of a return to form for British comedy coming back to America and starting to make headway again.
It still existed. It just existed on PBS.
Yeah.
right.
And they were much drier.
Yes, as most British comedy is. But there seems like there was a big gap in British comedy. You had like Monty Python, and then what was the next thing that came after it? Was it the return of things like The Vicar of Dibley, if you've seen that fantastic series, by the way?
Blackadder.
Blackadder. I was going to say Blackadder.
I never really got into British comedy until Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. I thought that was the funniest show I had ever seen. And I was so bummed that it was only 6 episodes. But it took, like, the British Office, it took a deep appreciation for the American one before I could finally get into the... I had tried before and didn't really sit well.
Gotcha.
But then we got into all those shows like Snuffbox and the IT Crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you watch Mighty Boosh yet?
Mighty Boosh.
Did you watch Spaced at all yet, Mike?
No.
No. Tyler actually recommended that one.
It's so good.
To me. I haven't seen it yet, though.
So I was wondering if somebody's going to bring up Spaced because both Peg and the writer-director, Edgar Wright, worked on that TV series, and this is actually, it kind of spun off, this movie kind of spun off of some stuff they had worked on that show. I've never seen Spaced either, but I knew that they were in it after this. Okay, so I think it's, so let's hear some of this 9/11 stuff.
dig in.
Justify that statement. So what makes you think that the zombie... return.
It's
after
not
9/11.
My idea. It's on the Wikipedia for the movie, under the analysis section.
Okay.
I guess it was suggested by Kyle Bishop, Peter Dendel, Gary Canavan, some other people. I guess The renaissance of the subgenre reveals a connection between zombie cinema and post 9/11 cultural consciousness, because horror films function as barometers of society's anxieties, and zombie movies represent the inescapable realities of unnatural death while presenting a grim view of the modern apocalypse.
Wow, it is.
Yeah, that's a. I could have seen it as a. Hey, life is really real right now, so let's make a more conscious effort to do stuff that is very surreal to get people out of their heads.
I think that's kind of how, like, with how Godzilla was and stuff.
I think when zombies came out is because they can shock and terrify a population that has become numb to other horror subgenres. And then, like, so possibility of wide-scale destruction and devastation, which 9/11 brought once again into the communal consciousness, found a ready narrative expression in the zombie apocalypse.
Sure, but with the first act of that film, who's the zombie? It's definitely Sean.
He's definitely just, Sean.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah, and then he got 9/11'd.
No, I think that's the funniest part of this film is that, like, it takes Sean and everybody else a while to catch on the fact that there are zombies around them.
Yeah.
Because they're every waking day, they're going through the exact same thing. And, like, you could just tell it's really done really well of the fact that they keep doing that walk to the shop.
Yeah, it's like the best scene.
Especially, yeah. He's like his normal day walk to the shop, and then you see, like, you, the audience, are like, oh my God, look at how much of this stuff is different right now, but Sean pays zero attention to it. Like, even the bloody handprint on the drink cooler.
Yeah, the guy washing his car, there's a hole in his windshield.
Yeah.
Slips on some blood.
I honestly cannot imagine being that oblivious to things. I notice, like, if leaves look different on a tree.
I think that was kind of the joke, though. I think for a lot of people, they probably could sympathize with Sean that everything seems pretty much the same day to day.
I mean, yeah, that aspect for sure. I'm so hyper aware of things and my surroundings at all times. I just can't imagine.
Well, then there's all that character growth, only for him to return to the beginning.
Yeah, then everything just goes back to normal, to the new normal. I think that's actually, that's really funny, because there was a lot of jives at both Dawn of the Dead and 28 Days Later in it, in that last section, because they're like, yeah, you talked about how this would ruin the world. Be like, no, we'd just literally adapt to it.
Yeah,
and
like
we would start
9/11.
Using... Yeah, I guess again. Yep.
I think there's a bit of a fun fact that Romero actually got a private screening of Shaun of the Dead. And when he watched the part, he's like, "We're coming to get you, Barbara." He didn't pick up on that at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Just because he's like,
That tracks, like, you know.
You can totally
fans
make me,
remember
yeah.
more than you do.
Oh, yeah. You could totally be like, oh, yeah, I guess I did do that, didn't I?
Oh, that's funny.
Yep.
All right, so I guess I'll go ahead and mention this. I was going to bring up the debate, but I don't know if it's going to be that between all of us, because so many of us have not seen the remaining two films. I'll mention I've seen Hot Fuzz. I like it. I think it's the best of the two that I've seen. But I never got around to watching The World's End. I own it, but I have not watched it yet for some reason. I plan to, like, watch it either tonight or tomorrow. But, so, I guess of the three of us that have seen it, do you think Hot Fuzz is better than Shaun of the Dead?
I'd honestly have to watch it again. I mean, when I watched it, it was, like, shortly after Shaun of the Dead. And I don't know, it wasn't really clicking. But I think if I watch it again, I might appreciate it more.
Oh, and I gotta ask. I know it's not part of this trilogy because it's not made by the same people. Did Paul come out between Hot Fuzz and The World's End?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe that's why I never got around to The World's End, because I was kind of over the two of them being in the same film together. Because
you had Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other films with Simon Pegg. So he and then you throw in your Star Treks in there as well. And
yeah.
Yeah. So he was all over the place.
So I think I had a little bit of burnout, so maybe that's why I never got around to it.
I think you'd appreciate World's End a bit more, too, because it is kind of like role reversal for the two. Like, you know, the other one who's usually goofy is a lot more serious, and the other one who's serious is a lot more goofy. So it's kind of like them just being, like, more refreshing, taking on new acts.
Yeah, gotcha. So it almost leads you to want to watch, if you have the time, all three of them. And then you see these character developments, and then, like, with Shaun of the Dead being the first act, Hot Fuzz being the second, and then the third, the roles are reversed because they all grow as characters. Because,
okay.
Oh, yeah. It's, and yeah, they don't relate to each other at all. But as a story and what they've trying to do with their lives, it's so good. And that's what I go to At World's End all the time. That's my go to fall asleep movie over Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Although they're, I think they're all equally great. I'm just old now, so that's At World's End. I relate to it a lot more.
Okay. I'll have to watch it, and also being old, I probably will relate to it, much like you, JJ.
JJ, do you think in World's End, do you think it needs the otherworldly stuff? I honestly think it could have just nixed all that and then just still been its own, like, good movie.
Yeah, I do, but I also think that's kind of their last bit, like, we still have more left in us to tell this bigger story, because if you look at their pacing of their movies, you've got another 5 years. So At World's End was what, 2013? Yeah, so with that, they haven't, that was their trilogy, but I think they have one more big story left, and that's going to be when they're in their 60s or, you know, a little bit older. And I don't know what that story is, but I'm going to age with them and be a part of it. So
they're going to remake Grumpy Old Men is what it'll be.
I hope so, and I'll be just as grumpy at the theaters watching it at the noon showing with my senior citizen discount.
Yes. Okay. See, this is we're in kind of a tough situation with this film, because we have some of us that have seen all the, like, I don't almost say the prerequisite zombie movies that you need to watch to really enjoy this film. And then we've got some of us that have just seen this film and, like, you don't have any of the zombie context. That's so interesting.
Well, with Mike, you know, as far as, like, comedic timing, like, think about the very beginning when they were talking, they were over at the Winchester. And so you had Sean talking, and but Ed was in the background saying the things that I think, you know. Oh, my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his girlfriend's name.
Liz,
yeah. So Liz was like, I think we should. And then you hear Ed in the background saying whatever, because he's playing the video games. And but, you know, it was so tight. Like, when you go to, like, any of the camera movements, it all has purpose. And if you watch Spaced, it would all make even more sense. Like, oh, that was a style that they did. And to really throw, like, I don't know, to make it seem like, oh, we respect the shows that we're copying, but we're also making our own story. And I don't know, I'm all over the place right now, but
no, that's good. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, a good thing, if you're gonna make a satire, if you don't have a legit love of the thing that you're making the satire of, it definitely shows. And so I think that these guys have definitely, you know, they have the chemistry of working together and stuff like that, and they definitely understand the genre that they're making fun of in the specific films.
Yeah, and that,
so would you, from what you guys are describing, do you think that they are to British stuff as like Kevin Smith is over here?
Ooh,
that is a,
do you think that they're like similar schools?
What?
Ooh. I'm not surprised you enjoy him.
Oh, I'm not surprised. But, you know, you
just
don't.
The way that everything he makes is pretty rooted in
like his
stuff that's
world.
Come
yeah,
before
yeah,
that
yeah.
That he enjoys.
Definitely.
Like, it's all other pop culture references and that kind of stuff.
Yes, and definitely, like, you'll definitely see that follow through thread in Hot Fuzz, because it's a love letter to action movies. And like I said, boy, if those quick camera cuts annoyed you in this film, Hot Fuzz is going to drive you nuts.
That is it. That is, yeah. And then, to your point, Mike, if you buy the Spaced DVD set, or if you see it, when I purchased it, it had a sticker, Quentin Tarantino's You know, and so it's the same kind of person who plays, who loves older stuff and copies, not copies, but reimagines things. It's like, oh, I love Spaced. And so to that point, yeah.
Well, that's a good analogy, too, because Quentin Tarantino kind of has that Kevin Smith like thing, too, where his world is always about, like, you know, TV shows and movies and stuff like that that came before it. And he loves pulling out like old soundtracks and making crazy stuff like that. So I could definitely see that, too.
David Lynch.
I guess you could argue David Lynch. Yeah. He likes to use the same actors.
All his definitely. Things could be in the same world, same universe.
Only the Dune world, though, right?
Yep. You know, the new one I feel like was more David Lynch than the one we just watched, the second one we watched yesterday. It felt more Lynchian than 80s Dune.
Wow, that would take some doing.
Yeah, so. Anything with a Harkonnens, you'll see.
All right. Okay.
So
Joey, with Shaun of the Dead, when Ed just says, there's a part, he has this one line, and I'm going to misquote it, but he pretty much tells the entire plot of the movie, like, what are we going to do? And I don't remember the context of it, but it's more of a, hey, we're going to go to the Winchester, we're going to have a few pints,
have a
whatever.
Pint and wait for it all to blow over.
Yeah, wait for it all. Yeah, and it's like, well, listen, it's repetitive. And the whole, like, zombie thing of that show, it's, or of the movie, it's, when does it become, because it's not repetitive, because the last act of it, and no spoilers, but, you know, when they run into the same people, like Yvonne, was that her name?
Yvonne of the, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, well, shit, I got everything together. What happened to you, Sean? And,
yeah.
And I'm like, holy cow. And then to see all of those shots, like that Mike Cates, it's so much Spaced. I mean, I loved every second of it. And I didn't even see Spaced until maybe 10 years after Shaun of the Dead. But then going back and watching it again, I'm like, holy cow, this is so good. Because I go to Spaced a lot, too. So okay. You should definitely watch it.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it's really funny because you can kind of tell, like, with the Yvonne of the Dead that's kind of going on versus the Shaun of the Dead. Like, that's the, like, more traditional zombie movie going on in her story that you're, like, you just get tiny little brief glimpses of.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then it's, like, so Shaun of the Dead is the opposite. It's, like, what would actually happen to real people should they wake in this apocalypse?
Yeah, and that, well, at least some of y'all made it, you know, and they're, like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah,
yeah. It's a bit of an interesting concept because, you know, it does have that theme of, like, unless you do something, things aren't going to change. And then, you know, he does do things, but like you said, the end result is that he still gets to do what he wanted to do, and he really changed much else.
Well, now it's about to get depressing.
Yeah. I think it's a good analogy, because in so much films, you have the hero's journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is, of course, one that's great. It's like, yeah, he's totally on the hero's journey, and ends up, you know, the hero's journey is supposed to be a circle, and you do kind of end up where you started, but he actually ends up, like, literally exactly where he started in his life. So he didn't really grow or anything like that. And society at the same time is also exactly in the same boat, that, you know, it had all this and it didn't grow or didn't get any better. If anything, it just ended up exactly where it was.
Yeah. Instead of starting at the top of the circle and ending back at the top, he started at the bottom.
Yeah.
But has the same relationship with everyone, with Ed, although his mother and stepfather passed away, but it's like he wasn't seeing him much anyway, so it's the same thing. Oh, now it's heartbreaking. I might cry.
But it's actually, like, it's not sad, though. It's like he kind of also just kind of, like, he's like, he learns to just enjoy his simple little life a little bit better.
So is Ed effectively immortal?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of weird to have a similarity, but, like, last night I just watched Ready Player One for the first time, and to me, it still kind of has that same solution of, like, we did all this, and, you know, I got to have the pick and say of what happens to this world, but I didn't really change anything, except we don't do anything on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I was like, okay, cool. At least the Gundam was there.
Oh, yeah. All right. I was just going to ask you real quick, Joe, were you impressed with the Gundam scenes or not?
No, yeah, it was cool. I mean, I think they definitely had everything they, you know, paid the licensing for accurate. Except, you know, he was totally holding his beam saber, like, backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Go watch that scene again.
Sorry, we had to geek out on a little bit of Gundam.
Yeah, I really should have suggested charge counterattack, so you could really do...
Oh, Joey!
Just to give you no context of what's going on.
I'm about to say, as quiet as we've been in this episode, can you imagine how dead silent that episode would be?
Oh, God. it would just be like, what were they talking about? What were they what were they referencing?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this one, I don't know. It's weird to think that people have come out and it's like, you know, this is a, you know, a response to 9/11, everything. And this movie has always just been like a very chill movie just to watch. And you're like, oh, there's also zombies in there. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Which it's, I mean, it's the zombie sub, the resurgence of the zombie subgenre.
I mean, that's, I think it's even the bigger point is to like have a story written where like everybody like, yeah, there's zombies everywhere. And the main character is still like, oh, well, that's like the least of my problems. I don't care. He's like, I want to get lit.
It is funny that that is kind of the least of Sean's problems is that the zombies are just,
you know, like his roommate Pete turns into a zombie, yeah. And they're just kind of like, what do we do about it? Like, let's try talking to him. So they're just like, yeah, knocking on his door, like, Pete.
And they see him again, by the way, still naked.
Yep. Oh, and of course, we got to get our Star Wars reference in. Pete, as some of you may know, is the voice of Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace and subsequent stuff. He's not Ray Park the actor.
Wait, what?
But he's the... Yeah. Pete is the voice of Darth Maul.
Oh, Darth Maul, why in it?
That's because... All right, so... JJ, you watched X-Men the movie, right?
I did.
So, you know Ray Park's Toad in that. So, he talks like he actually speaks. So, yeah, they overdub Darth Maul all the time. Now you know. You know he's half the battle.
That's the
I watched Star X-Men movie. Matt. I actually was watching X-Men on 9/11, and I wish that was what we were dealing with right now. Because my dad called me and told me what happened. Yeah, like this seems more reasonable. I understand this better than whatever my dad just told me happened.
Damn, you were seeing that super early in the morning.
I was homesick from school.
Oh, okay, I got you.
I also watched Blair Witch for the first time that day.
No. After or before?
My other go-to movies.
Yeah. How do we make this day better, Blair Witch? Let's
no, that's actually what I was watching when he called, and then I was I just remember he said, told me what happened. I said, "Is that bad?" Because
you were watching Blair Witch at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m.
Yes.
Yeah.
I stayed home from school, so. I was by myself, so that is the time when I would watch the forbidden films in my parents' room.
I see.
All the rated R movies. And then after my dad called, I went downstairs to watch TV, and X-Men was on, and it was in the Statue of Liberty, and I remember thinking, I wish this is what was happening.
So to Mike's point about how quotable this movie is, do you have a favorite quote and a part from that movie?
I definitely do. I love the where Sean is trying to talk to his mom about how bad his stepdad has been to him just to get her to leave, and he's like, several times he touched me. And she just looks at him and goes, I made that up. I don't know why I did it. Or his reaction also where she's like, well, she told me, he told me what you called him. He's like, he did? Motherfucker! Just
like, I do love their slow building tension of them playing the record at like 3 in the morning. And he's like, you know, he's like, it's Saturday. No, it's not. It's fucking Sunday. And I've got to go to work in 2 fucking hours because every fucker in my environment is fucking ill. Now do you understand why I'm so fucking angry? And the guy's just like, fuck yeah. And then it just follows up with that, what happened to your hand? Some bloke bit me on the subway. Why'd he bite you? I don't know. I didn't stop to ask them.
Yeah. I remember laughing at that too. It's not hip hop, it's electro.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta say, I also love the throwing the records.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
And like literally thinking about like going through your music collection, like which CD would you wing at a zombie's head? I was like, oh, they threw the Batman soundtrack. I was like, what about Party Man? That is a banger.
It was really funny that they were playing them like this, because I was thinking like saw blades.
So, and I might be wrong on this, but I thought I read that they only got approved to show two album covers, and one was a Sade album cover, because and she was like, yeah, go ahead, I don't care. And that's the one they threw.
Yep.
But yeah, I wouldn't throw my records. I mean, I just sent y'all a picture of a record I spent way too much money on.
Yeah. I'd be like, no, don't throw that one, JJ. Please don't throw that one.
I would cry.
It is a little funny to think, you know, probably just how simple and, you know, video game minded they are, that they would think this is the solution, just to grab out all their records and start tossing them.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it is interesting to see people with a video game mindset of like trying to tackle these problems.
Plus, jumping on that issue of like, you know, them actually getting like weapons and stuff, and then kind of emphasizing how long it'd take before that would work.
In the zombie apocalypse, if I had a Night Trap CD-ROM, if that was my main weapon, it's like, I'm dead. am I throwing it?
I encourage you to watch that scene again of just them beating that zombie to death, because you can see on their expressions, they're like, this isn't cool. This is like, this is taking too long.
Yeah. And like, you know, it makes you gives you an appreciation of a cricket bat, and how versatile it would be for a weapon. And I think there's one super big takeaway from this movie that we came away with, that I honestly, it's nice that someone finally said it. It's the fact that dogs cannot look up. That is, you know, it's a scientific fact. And I love the fact that this is a big debate amongst the movie several times about whether or not dogs can look up.
I'm just saying, my dog's like a foot tall, and he seems like he looks up at me.
He can't look up.
Yes, he can.
He's literally changing his body to look up at you. He can't just look up at you.
I'm going to take a picture. I'll send it to you.
Send a picture of Dexter. Make sure he's wearing one of his pajamas.
He is.
Or, yeah, I know he is.
He's cozier than I am.
Yeah.
And he'll be looking up.
The real truth about this urban legend.
I believe that dogs can't look up.
I think they can.
Well,
can't they? They're having that, like, civilized conversation in the back of the car. Which, that was a sweet jag, by the way. Totally love that jag.
Jag.
Dude, love it. He just wrecks the car. He's like, I'm gonna take
the jag. Yeah, he's like, I've always wanted to drive a jag. I mean, and it begs us, like, if you were in that situation, what car are you gonna steal and totally drive? You know, I remember a line from Mystery Science Theater 3000. If the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm gonna get football pads and helmets and just dive through plate glass windows all day long. That'd be something I would do. Drive a bulldozer.
Philip,
stuff like that.
You still got the safety locks on.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, why don't you guys try saying the word can't in a British accent?
Hmm.
Can't?
Ooh, I think I know
where
this is going.
Oh, goodness.
I'm not going to try it.
JJ, looks like he's processing it.
No, because I always try to make people do an accent of a famous celebrity in a British accent.
Oh,
and no one can do
it.
And this is not the form to do it here. Well,
okay,
on your free time.
No, do it. Tell them.
All right, I got to know what's the question.
All right, do Bill Cosby with a British accent? No one can do it. Try it, and you're going to fail miserably.
I don't know if anyone should do it.
This sounds like a riddle that when you finally unlock it, something happens in the universe. just leave it untouched there.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
God, work used to be full of those. What was that question that you asked everybody? The big debate?
Oh, the hot dog and sandwich combo? Yeah, that was a tough one. British Bill Cosby or a Jamaican Irish accent are the hardest things. No one's going to do it.
Here's one that nobody can do.
Ooh.
Irish Yakuza accent. Because they both really rely on their R's. So how?
Yeah, well, I mean, I may misquote this, but in Japan, isn't McDonald's Ronald McDonald Donald McDonald? They don't. It's just Donald McDonald. They don't call him Ronald.
I don't know about that, but I think I know there's that,
something like that. Yeah,
a Yakuza accent is like big, like rolling R's almost, and then you know. R's are really sort of just like Irish accent. R's are pretty distinct as well. So like, how do you do it?
That's a very good point.
It's a good point.
So I'm trying to think about back when I went to Ireland and when I asked someone where Castletown was, and he's like, "You go to Church Street," and I can't think of like how someone would say that in a different language with such a hard R on it. These are like more of these mysteries we don't need to solve.
You know, like,
yeah. Again, we opened up a probably a 40-hour conversation here. That's not going
to
happen.
Definitely.
So you guys should just try to say "can't" in an English accent.
No, thanks. We're good. Wow. Shaun of the Dead has taken us places today. It really has.
But I think that's the point of the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
You touch on random things you wouldn't think about.
So back to the scene where Ed's driving the Jaguar and Sean's with the stepfather. How did you all feel about that? Because Ed's having the time of his life while Sean's finally relating to someone he absolutely hated.
So. Oh, I think that is just like the quintessential, like, let's try to make a serious, not serious. They're doing it as a total joke because they're making fun of, you know, in a situation in another movie like this, this conversation would have been played straight.
Yeah,
and they're playing it straight, but it's also like, is this the time and the place to be having this conversation in this wacky stuff like that? And it's hitting Sean so hard. And then he's like, you know, because he was like, totally, I'm going to go and bash his head in. That was his literal plan.
Yeah.
And they showed it like four times in a clip and then just like grabbing his mom and just walking her smiling out of there. So I think it was like it was good. As a scene, like it was again trying to prompt that character growth for Sean, and then it like it immediately just turns it into a huge joke because, you know, he's like, they do the music thing, which I thought was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Of he's like, there's nothing left of him in there, and he turns off the radio.
Yeah,
song was still playing.
So I feel the exact same way. It's like this is a conversation that needed to happen between him and his dad, but it's still the same respect afterwards after he had to kill him. But
yeah,
but with his mother, and he took a headshot on his mom. You know, and
that was like the one that they kind of played. Like I was like, that's a real like moment for them in this film. It's like that's actually really tough to handle or see because the mom is so sweet throughout the whole thing, and then
you figured out everybody at that particular point, their motives, what they needed to be, and how they actually are at that point. And he stepped up at that point. You know, you can see that growth, but then he just shot his mom in the head. You're like, oh dear, like if I had it. And listen, I don't want to be in that position, but if the zombie apocalypse, I'll probably shoot my mom in the knee, and everyone's like, what are you doing? It's like, well, she's, you know, I could.
Oh, just letting you know, if the zombie apocalypse happens, I have no problem taking out every last one of you.
Oh.
That's fine. I need to get a bow and arrow, because I don't think I'd want a melee weapon, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I'd want you to. I'd be like, just go for it. But yeah, that's kind of the other thing, too. It's kind of like about character growth. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's like the prick of the group, the pompous asshole. And it kind of gives you like that dilemma, because you know he aims at Sean but does pull the trigger and it's empty, so he would have done it. And you know he's getting his moment. We're like, maybe I was a bit off the handle, and you know.
And then they tear his legs off.
Yeah, it's like the movie telling you, you're not gonna get a chance to feel bad for this guy.
Yes, David.
I always just thought that was interesting. Where he's like, maybe I can grow too. And the movie's just like, nah.
Nah.
At the point you're laughing when the zombies are ripping his intestines out.
Yeah, and they rip his legs off. So it's hilarious.
Yeah, because, I mean, they did everything they could to save him, but end up just only saving his legs.
Yep. And I think it's also great, you know, of course, you have the last moments, like, where they think it's all over for them and the what's Nick's name? Nick Frost name in this
Ed.
Film?
Ed.
Ed. Where Ed gets bit, and then he does the last little jokes, and they're saying, you know, we love you, buddy, and they have that, like, moment, and it's just, it's great, where he does the fart joke again, and then calls them gay after they say they love him.
Going up the elevator.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I changed my mind. I would like to be shot. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That was that part, too.
But it also shows you what kind of character Ed is, because they left the gun with him, and then they're like, we already told you what we would do. Leave the gun with them. Yeah. They get out. Everything's saved, and he's still alive. You know, and he's okay with being Ed. He's still
Ed. Yep. Even as a zombie. He's like, hey, don't try to bite me.
I think that's a good point of, like, character growth, too, because even though, like, he is moving on, like, he's, like, the one thing he won't leave behind because he's always been his constant. And it has, like, that little bit of, like, that touching moment where he's, like, shooting Pete to make him stop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
because it's more of like the more things change, the more things stay the same. Yeah. If that's what it's trying to drive at. But, you know, I still think this movie should not be taken as seriously.
But it's funny that even a film like this, you can still find some deep
meaning. Yeah, it's elements.
Deep
of
meaning, yeah. Yeah. That just shows you how good of a film it is.
It's got topics worth deep diving into.
If you want to talk about it, you can, but you can also just totally turn your brain off and just exist. Which is usually the route I take. I don't need to analyze Shaun of the Dead.
No, there's no reason to, but once you hit World's End,
saw it on the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, definitely watch World's End. You would kind of relate to it, especially about the things you could have done. And,
it does make you think about your youth a lot. Like, the things you like, life after high school and stuff like that.
I'm laughing because it's something so funny about hearing your baby brother go, makes you think about your youth, where you're always going to be a kid to me. That's neither here nor there. All right. Anybody else got anything left to say about the film?
Watch it. It's good.
Yeah, totally definitely watch it.
Mike, I hope you guys do pick up the zombie movies, watch those, and then rewatch this. I think you'd enjoy it more. Jeez, Samantha, it's just a suggestion.
Well, I'm just telling you, I don't like zombies.
Okay, but for real, you should watch at least Night of the Living Dead. It is a very, very important movie in cinema. It really is.
Yeah, I will go back.
I think it is telling, though, because, you know, at that point, to Samantha's point, it's you gotta remember, like, when that came out, like, you were saying zombies were everywhere to the point you're nearly sick of them, but that's like one where it's like you can just watch that movie, and even if it doesn't like it has zombies in it, it's like it's not the point. It's such a just standalone by itself. You don't have to care if there's zombies or not in it,
right? But I don't like horror movies either.
Yeah. Well, that might be
a romantic comedy.
So I'm just going to make a note of that to make sure that my next couple of picks are all horror movies.
Okay, I'll just say how much I didn't like them. Like, it's fine. You can pick whatever you want. I'm used to people not liking my things, so it's not like, it's fine.
Well, if there was one you could watch, it would be Night of the Living Dead, because there's only so much horror and zombie stuff happening at one time. There's a lot of shots. This is my favorite type of zombie they show, where they just kind of rock back and forth outside the house rather than doing anything forceful.
Yeah. I could read about it.
You could. You certainly could. All right. Well, I guess we'll say goodbye here, folks, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.
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 I was trying to do their zombie impersonation.
Bye.